As Americans, our identities are often defined by our careers. But what if we were also defined, at least in part, by our hobbies, the things we did outside of work, you know, for fun? Our next guest says that could actually make us happier. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What is your hobby, or what are your hobbies? Has taking up a hobby improved your life? Do you think of it as part of who you are? Do you have time for it with the challenges of work, family, all the other stuff? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also join us on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Susie Nielsen's a writer. Her works appeared in The New Yorker, The Atlantic, Vice, and Quartz. She recently wrote about hobbies for TheCut.com. Susie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Rob, thank you so much for having me.
You write, Susie, that over half of us Americans get our sense of identity, at least in a big part, from our jobs. Is that saying something about us as Americans and where our preoccupations are?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this because, you know, I'm a journalist and I run with a crowd that's pretty work obsessed. I also went to kind of a university that stressed that, and I just think we get that kind of messaging a lot. In the piece I wrote about this advertisement that displays a woman who sort of looks super sleep deprived, and it's an advertisement for a sort of gig economy kind of job. The woman's expected to work around the clock, and the advertisement glorifies that. And I think that's a problem we kind of all have. We push each other to work as much as possible.
And you write that you were at a gathering and somebody asked, what do you do? And you gave the wrong answer, basically.
Yeah, it's so funny. I mean, it was kind of a culture shock. So I was in South Africa last year filming a documentary, and I went to this barbecue dinner with a couple of friends, and a South African woman asked me, what do you do? And I thought she meant, what do you do for work? Because that's kind of the knee-jerk response that every American has to that question. So I told her, you know, I'm a journalist, I work for a magazine, and she kind of looked at me with bemusement almost. It was kind of a shock, you know. I just assumed that that's how everyone answered that question, but I've since found, you know, I've been thinking back on it, and even when I've been in places like Spain or Australia, people have asked me that question, and it doesn't usually refer to what is your job, which tends to be the more boring answer. In other countries, people are really asking, what do you like to do? What sort of stokes your fire, or what do you find interesting? And usually when you answer in that way, it actually leads to a more interesting conversation and can often build a better relationship. So I just thought that was really interesting.
And I think we view the hobby that we have, whatever it might be, as maybe something kind of frivolous, maybe kind of goofy that we spend our time doing this. But you write, you looked at some research and some expertise on this. Having that hobby or those hobbies, it can be serious stuff. It can have real benefits for us.
Yeah, you know, so I was really interested in the sort of psychology behind this. So I found this study by a Duke University professor, Patricia Linville, and she was looking at how different people react to stressors in their lives. And one example she gave was of somebody who identified themselves primarily through their work and their marriage. And say that person suffers a professional setback due to maybe a marital complication, if that person identifies just as a partner and just as a professional, then what's called their self-concept is going to kind of take a much bigger blow than say if they identify themselves in a number of different lights. Like I've been trying to do this more because I definitely can fall into this trap, but I've been trying to think of myself, you know, I'm not just a writer, I'm also a singer, I like to sing, I like to go swimming, I'm also a sister and a daughter. And the more, the argument basically is that the more different kind of identity baskets you have, the less likely it is that one really big blow is going to knock you out.
And Susie, you mentioned that you've got a job that takes up a lot of your time and attention. Do you feel like you have time to do things like your singing or other hobbies?
Well, it's funny you ask that because I just reconnected with my old college band.
Wow.
Yeah, Juicy Fruit. I'm very excited. We're hopefully going to start rehearsing pretty soon. But I would say the first, I mean, I'm actually in graduate school right now, and that can kind of be a draw on your time. But I find that even if I don't have time for, you know, a scheduled hobby, like twice or three times a week, taking up a few hours, just going for walks with friends or really putting some time into your relationships can really help with this. Because the more relationships you have, you have those sort of different selves when you're interacting with different people. And then even something as simple as like an exercise class that is fun and kind of gets you moving and meeting other people. I think we can all do it, you know. Everyone says, you know, I don't have time for this, but it's really about what you make time for. So if you really care about, you know, having a stable mental state, which I know, I mean, a lot of my peers actually kind of glorify this up and down way of living, but if you want to sort of take steps towards safeguarding your mental health, definitely reach out to more people and take some time to diversify your interests.
We're talking about hobbies and the value of having a hobby. Susie Nielsen is with us. She's written about this recently. We'll go to your calls now. Our listeners have hobbies, apparently, and want to share them with us. John starts us off in Nina. John, hi.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. What's your hobby, John?
My hobby is building drones, quadcopters and hexacopters. I'm 54 years old, and I found this hobby a couple of years ago. Looking at YouTubes, I bought one of the little tiny plastic toys, and it just has snowballed since then.
Now, were
my
you,
latest project is, oh, go ahead.
Were you mechanically inclined before this, John?
I'm an electrical engineer by training. and there's all sorts of YouTube videos, and there's all sorts of communities out there. I've got my favorite people I like to follow, and there's a lot of soldering, firmware upgrades. I mean, at the end of the day, you get a camera up in the air. It's a really a fun hobby.
And, John, do you have friends from this online and or in person?
Well, mostly online. The folks I work with, they don't get into the hobby. My kids, they can't stand going out with me to the field. One of the things of the hobby is you wreck the thing, right? And then you spend most of your time rebuilding it.
John, that sounds like a lot of fun. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And Susie, he started this, I mean, he had relevant experience as an electrical engineer, but he started this in his 50s, so we can discover these new hobbies whenever in our lives, really.
Yeah, that's really great. I actually, that reminds me of my uncle, actually, who lives in the Bay Area. He's recently started taking up woodworking, and he makes these amazing bowls, but he was not really artistically inclined before this. He started in his late 40s, and now he's selling them. So I think it's definitely possible to take up hobbies later in life, even if it's not really in your field of expertise, but probably that helps.
John, thanks a lot for calling. We'll go next to Logan in Wisconsin Dells. Logan, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your hobby, Logan?
Well, when I was a kid, I grew up in Appalachia, and our parents had a showing rabbit. Like, dog shows with rabbits. And we went all over the country from Rhode Island to Wichita, Kansas, to these national rabbit shows where there'd be 20,000 rabbits.
Wow.
And it completely changed my life as a kid. Coming from Appalachia, I was exposed to all different kinds of ways of living and everybody from city slickers to farmers who spoke four languages and just completely shaped my entire worldview, you know, that I grew into just from showing rabbits as a kid. To being exposed to different people.
Do you still raise rabbits, Logan, or do you have new hobbies nowadays?
I don't raise rabbits anymore. I moved to Wisconsin a few years ago. I was supposed to be here for 3 months. Now I'm going on year four. And so I've been talking about going out and getting some rabbits, and there's a trio of American sable rabbits. It's this beautiful breed in Tennessee for $500 for the three of them. I keep thinking, am I crazy enough to get back into this and drop $500 on three rabbits, drive down to Tennessee and pick them up? And I think I just might be.
All right, get back in the game, Logan. Thanks. And you can, of course, check out rabbits at all the county fairs, and especially the big state fair in the summer. There are a lot of people showing rabbits there. So, Susie, Logan is maybe on the cusp of getting back into his childhood hobby.
Oh, man, I hope so. That sounds like an incredible hobby. I'm a little jealous.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a big commitment once you go and pick those rabbits up, though. Logan, good luck with that if you do end up doing this. You can join in with your hobby, what it means in your life. Your questions about hobbies at 800-642-1234. Susie Nielsen is with us. She wrote a piece for thecut.com. It's called Why Hobbies Make You Happy. And we want to hear from more of you. What hobby do you have? Does it make you happy? Do you want to get back into something or maybe try something new? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We'll pick up the conversation, get more of your calls coming up on Central Time. Back to your calls now. Carrie is on the line in Milwaukee. Carrie, hi.
Hi. I have too many hobbies to even list or have time for. I refer to myself as a voracious reader, an avid angler, a lover of all crafts, and last year I got back into woodworking,
Wow. Building
things. And I can attest to what you're talking about. I've been through, the last 6 years have been a very up and down period for me career-wise. But I've never completely lost my mind because I've always had something to do while I was looking for a job. You know what I mean? On the other hand, my husband had a job loss a few years ago, and he fell into a severe depression, like debilitating, for about 2 years. And, you know, I think we as a society, men are far more likely to identify themselves by their career and what their job title is. And it literally took away his sense of self, as you were discussing earlier. I know that if I'm out of work or something, I've always got something to fall back on. I mean, gosh, I can hopefully fill the freezer with fish if I need to. So it's a huge thing for me, and I'm really glad to see that there's some research around it, and I'm not just speaking anecdotally.
Carrie, thank you so much for sharing that, and good luck to your husband. I hope things have bounced back there. Susie, that really gets to a lot of what you're talking about. If we're too much bound into our job as our identity, I mean, job loss is bad enough economically. Forget the identity part, but if it's our identity too, that's a really big loss.
Yeah, it actually made me think about, a lot of different sectors of the American economy are being turned over to AI, like, a lot of these self-driving cars, and the Amazon Go store just opened up in Seattle, and that will sort of, if that store model replicates, a lot of retail jobs will be gone, and I just keep thinking about how many people will have so much free time on their hands, and, I mean, barring the economic difficulties, the mental health stuff can actually make it a lot harder to look for a job, so that point is really important, I think, to keep yourself busy if you have all that time.
Thanks a lot for calling in. We'll go next to Paula on the line in Cambridge. Paula, hi.
Hi.
What'd you want to tell us about, Paula?
Well, I, at age 47, realized a lifelong dream, and my primary hobby has been working with, I purchased an off-track thoroughbred.
Wow.
And with a lot of support, have trained her, and I'm still training her, but I've had her for almost 4 years now, and it makes me so happy and is so fulfilling, and I love her beyond reason.
Oh. And Paula, did you have horses around when you were a kid, or were you the kid who's like, I want a horse, but I get one someday, I'm going to get a horse?
No, I had worked at a stable and I had riding lessons, but I had never owned a horse. I begged for one and never got one. So this is the first horse I ever owned. But it has just, and, it's become a huge part of my social network. I share it with some of the younger females in the family. I ride with my great niece. And it's when I'm stressed, I go to the stable. and I have a very rewarding job. I enjoy what I do, but there's just not been anything else in my life quite like this.
Paula, thank you so much for sharing that. Wow, so much there, Susie. Her social network, it brings her together with family members, it sounds like, and stress relief, plus fulfilling that lifelong dream all in one.
Yeah, what struck me actually is I'm starting to see a pattern here of people using hobbies to connect with their childhood selves, which I think really is an interesting layer to this whole self-complexity thing because, work is this very grown-up thing. We become adults and we get all these responsibilities, but In doing that, we often lose kind of the sense of wonder and lightness of being a kid. And if you can have a hobby that connects you back with that, that's really amazing. I mean, that's how I treat singing, actually, because I was singing since I was three. Like, I was in musical theater and I did all that. So I resonate with that impulse, I guess.
That's interesting. Hobbies are often the things we give up to become adults.
Yeah.
Which is sad, but happy when we come back. Yeah. Paula, thank you so much. I'll go next to Mike on the line in Appleton. Mike, hi.
Hey, it's good to talk to you. So I have more hobbies than you can name, but I started playing the five-string banjo when I was probably 14 or 15, and I'm 62 right now. And I worked my way through school, playing in bands and everything. Well, the long and short of it is when I retired, I was finally able to play the banjo just because it sounds so beautiful. And I've grown just to love it. And I literally could play 4 or 5 hours a day and not even think about it. Then I draw, pen and ink and pencils. And I walk all over the woods. And the best thing about being retired is, living in Appleton, I'm an hour and a half away from Door County, so I get to Door County about once a month. And it's just adventuring and new experiences and new feelings and a sense of mindfulness. And when I play the banjo, especially, I'm a different person, in a different state. And it's not about making money anymore. It's about the love of the sound.
Fantastic, Mike. Thank you so much. And Susie, a lot there, but he's retired now. And that makes me think, we talked about job loss, but you hear people sometimes they're at loose ends after they retire, especially if work was everything the life was built around. That's going to be a critical time, I would imagine, to find a good hobby.
Definitely, yeah. Actually, that makes me think about, so my stepdad actually retired a few years ago, and he's the kind of person that can't really be sitting around doing nothing. Like, he's kind of a compulsive doer, and this is less of a hobby and more of a really big project, but last summer he decided he was going to bike across the U.S.
Wow.
He made it 4,000 miles over 3 months, I think, and it was so fun. I joined him on a leg or two of it, and it was so fun to watch how he, he was just over the course of the trip, he started relating to the world so differently, and I think that touches on what you were just speaking about, with the sort of, I feel like the more multi-sensory your hobbies can be, like playing music or going on an adventure, sort of broadening yourself out beyond, your office or like the screen of a computer, which is often, that's a lot of the jobs we have today.
Mike, thank you so much for sharing that story at 800-642-1234. We're talking about hobbies with writer Susie Nielsen. Back to your calls. Ashley is on the line in Madison. Ashley, hi.
Hi.
Which one?
So I was calling because I am a mother of a 2-year-old and twin 7-month-olds. And with this second pregnancy, I've had been affected by postpartum depression and anxiety. And something that my therapist and my doctor said was that I needed to get back in touch with find an identity outside of being, my job and being a mother. And so I've started taking Tai Chi classes through the City Rec program. And something as simple as taking 30 minutes a couple times a week to close the bedroom door and read a book of my choosing without having to think about anything but myself. And I have found that has been very rewarding and rejuvenating for me as I work through the postpartum depression and anxiety.
Ashley, I'm so glad you found those hobbies to help you through that. Susie, finding space for herself. I mean, that's a lot of what people are doing, I guess, with hobbies.
Yeah, definitely. And I think something like reading, which can sort of transport you into a different world where you don't have all those responsibilities, because that's what work is. It's being responsible for often a lot of different people and a lot of different tasks. And a hobby that can sort of just take you out of that universe can be so, so helpful.
Ashley, thanks for that call. In our last minute or so, Susie, we were talking earlier around the office today. Maybe hobby, it sounds like a trivial word. Do we need a better word?
I think so. I think even the word hobby, it sounds so sing-song, you know? Like, I just kept thinking in this article when people asked me about it, I would say, you know, I wouldn't say I was writing about hobbies. I would say I was writing about self-complexity because I think that's really what it is. It doesn't have to be, like I said, a scheduled activity, and it doesn't have to be like wood carving, although that's a really cool one. But as long as you're kind of taking the time to check in with yourself in a way that's not like a productivity machine, I think that's what's really important, to just really remember that you're not living to work. You have a life outside of that.
Yeah, people we won't have time to get to. We've got Kelly on the line who paints, Emily who is a Lego builder, Andy emailed. He builds and customizes motorcycles, and we a lot of people out there with things. Are you inspired, Susie, to make sure you make time to hang out with the band and do some singing?
Oh, definitely. I'm going to do that this weekend. I'm going to text my friend Austin as soon as I get off the phone with you.
Fantastic. Susie, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Rob. It was a pleasure.
That's Susie Nielsen. She joined us to talk about her recent piece for The Cut. It's Why Hobbies Make You Happy. Well, still time for you to tell us about your hobby. You can do that on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. What is your hobby, your pastime, whatever you want to call it?